Hey everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody. This episode of the Charlie Kirk Show, we did some instant reaction after Joe Biden's speech. Bear with us a little bit. It was a live stream and we were going in real time. But the insight and the takeaways are very good. If you had a chance to listen to Senator Tim Scott's remarks, it'll make some of my feedback, I think, even more helpful and understandable. So email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Joe Biden is on war footing. He's marching through the country with the inevitable goal of permanent domination of the American left over our country. That is their goal. It's a political victory. It's very important we outline that. Email us your thoughts again, freedom@charliekirk.com. A special giveaway offer. We will be giving away 5 signed copies of my book, The MAGA Doctrine, to random people who subscribe to The Charlie Kirk Show. So just show us you're subscribed and your subscription, 5 right here, right now on this podcast. And do me a favor, get your friends subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Just proof of subscription to us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Look, for many of you that watch our live stream or our radio show, listen to our radio show, you know I talk about Relief Factor a lot. And look, truth is, I know millions of people are in some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older, that can do it. That's why I'm so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely seen this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their number of total happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip or knee pain, or even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95, about $1 a day, to see if we can get you out of pain. So go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. The Talbots are amazing people. Check it out. Relieffactor.com. Hey, everybody. Hope you're having a good night. Hopefully you're doing something more enjoyable than watching the speech. Maybe you were watching the speech. We're going to cut to Senator Tim Scott as soon as he gives his response. I have a lot of takeaways from what we just saw. You guys can email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com, and your questions. I do want to take some of your questions. And I don't make it a habit to watch, you know, President Biden, Joe Biden. It's usually just whatever is provided to him. But I wanted to see this for a reason, and I want to comment on it because it was less about him. He wasn't really involved in this speech. But the people behind him knew that there would be millions of eyeballs on this speech. And there were some really important takeaways, not about what he was saying or his legislative action, but instead how the American left views this moment and their current playbook, what they're actually planning to do next, and what that means for our nation and our country. And Joe Biden went a little over an hour, and it didn't feel like a typical State of the Union address at all. I mean, it felt a little bit like Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars. It was almost as if he was giving a speech on war footing, that this was a general that was giving an update on the war front. And I want to explore that and build that out, because this was not just a speech for unity. I did not hear that term once, by the way, the entire speech. We got to come together, that we have to work together. Now, I think Joe Biden is settling into this idea that he is on such the moral high ground that he is General Eisenhower of the coalition of armed forces in World War II, and he is going to win at all costs. And This is a new type of Democrat Party that we are dealing with here. This is not the Democrat Party of Barack Obama that will patiently march through the institutions. This is a bold and urgent Democrat Party. And there's a lot that actually I think Republicans can learn from in this moment. And so as we're waiting for Senator Tim Scott here, I want to say, as we kind of walk through this, these remarks, and you guys can email us in real time, freedom@charliekirk.com. We're going to be taking a lot of your questions, which is, Joe Biden opened up by saying that the attack on the Capitol on January the 6th was the worst attack on our democracy since the American Civil War. Worse than the 1983 bombing, attempted bombing on the Capitol. Worse than 9/11. Worse than Pearl Harbor. But he has called explicitly that this was the worst attack on our country since the American Civil War. So that's a very important point. It's an important point because much of the substance of the speech was bookended, if you will. It was framed around this idea of starting on January 6th and ending on January 6th. That I am going to justify my war powers by bringing up what happened on January 6th. So we obviously did a live stream the day of January 6th here. We did not support the storming of the Capitol here. We also don't support the killing of Ashley Babbitt, and we still don't know who killed Ashley Babbitt. And Joe Biden continually says that it was an insurrection. It was more like an interruption than an insurrection. And I'm not minimalizing any of the police officers that died. And new evidence shows that they actually died of natural causes. And if anyone laid a hand on a law enforcement officer, I hope they go to jail. It's an unacceptable thing to do. But to then add this as the context of the entire speech, the worst attack since the Civil War, and then he ends with that, I think is a very important takeaway. So I'm going to have a little bit of a different take than most pundits and commentators and talk show hosts. I think that Joe Biden was telling the truth when he said that we are on the move. Now, I don't think he was saying the nation was on the move. I think he's saying the Democrat Party is on the move. You see, Joe Biden has decided to say the private part out loud. Joe Biden decided to say the part that they used to hide and disguise. He's saying, you know what? We're playing offense as Democrats, and we're not going to apologize for it. Joe Biden, again, he's just the spokesperson, the temporary spokesperson for this. But he is the current placeholder of a belief in the Democrat Party that the reason that they have not been able to get their transformational agenda forward is that they have not treated us like domestic enemies, that they've tried to pander to us too much. They have not been bold enough. And the reason they got Donald Trump and they had to live through that is because they were not aggressive enough. So Joe Biden is unafraid to say, you know what? We are on the move. We are going to call half the country domestic terrorists. We're no longer going to apologize for wanting to nationalize your health care or destroy the dollar. Instead, we are going to say very firmly, we're on the move. Now, let me say this. Have you ever heard of a politician frame a political moment is on the move? Again, that feels like he's trying to conquer Europe. Now, I'm not saying that there hasn't been a Republican that has used that similar language, but there was almost a refrain with the dystopian imagery of the two mask wearers behind him, the every other seat, despite almost everyone being already vaccinated and wearing masks. It was almost this footing of the real threat here, as we are in our militarized capital, surrounded by armed guards. The real threat is the people that we displaced from power, the people who didn't vote from us. That was the constant theme throughout the speech. Now, there are actually some things that I think Republicans can learn from, some things that I think Joe Biden was very wise to mention. But then he completely invalidated many of those things later in his speech. But when you say on the move, it feels like it was George W. Bush giving remarks in front of Congress when he was trying to find Saddam Hussein. On the move. Now, maybe the best way you could say is, well, Charlie, he meant that we are economically developing and investing and we're doing a lot better. Maybe. Or maybe he's saying what we know is true, which is that the Democrat Party is going to metaphorically roll the tanks through the streets until they're in power permanently. That's what I hear when I say that Democrats are on the move. So there's a lot of specifics here I want to get into, from how he described the vaccine to the difference to the non-mention of the administration that came before him, to this very bizarre line where he says that we need to get vaccine on Mars because then we get better internet. Maybe he was just misreading his teleprompter. But I'm going to reiterate something that I've said before. Joe Biden is an immoral person. He's not a well-meaning grandpa. He's an immoral person. Any human being that inherits a vaccination effort like Joe Biden did, and he did not mention once a thank you, a sentence, or a syllable for the Herculean effort that the Trump administration did before the Biden administration when it came to personal protection equipment and vaccines. And by the way, I am not personally going to take the vaccine. If you do, that's your choice. That's your liberty. I'm not going to judge you. Consult people you trust and read literature that you find true and make that decision. But Joe Biden is taking this victory lap saying, hey, you know, on January 20th, vaccination rates for seniors were less than 2%. Hey, Joe Biden, you know, you got vaccinated when Trump was president. Joe Biden, you got vaccinated when Trump was president. And he said, you know, when I got to be president, we had no vaccines. Now, good news for Joe Biden, the Washington Post has completely disbanded its fact-checking mechanism. So there will be no fact-checking tomorrow morning in the Washington Post. Who needs fact-checking when you enter a one-party state? The Ministry of Truth will only go after the opposition. And so Joe Biden is taking a celebratory victory lap for something that Donald Trump deserves credit for. Now, again, whether you think the vaccine works or not is actually completely irrelevant to what I'm about to say. So Donald Trump sat in a room with the experts and they said, Mr. Trump, President Trump, you have to pick one of these companies, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Moderna, of who's going to get this vaccine effort out. And he said, you know what? All of the above. We're going to fund all of them. And if they all get it, more vaccines, the better. Do you know how much you need to save to have a comfortable retirement? The average retirement savings for families, according to one recent study, is $255,000. If you are using these averages as goals for your own retirement, let me be blunt. Even $1 million won't be enough by the time you retire because of inflation. Retirement is not one size fits all. How much should you save depends on what kind of lifestyle you want to pursue after retirement. But remember that inflation should be factored in. The $1 million you saved 40 years ago is worth less than half of that now. So invest in assets that will store the value of your investment. That's key to diversifying your portfolio. And there's nothing better than gold. I'm a believer in gold. Did you know that if you invested $1 million in gold 40 years ago, you'd be sitting on over $50 million today. So think about it. If you put $1,000 in gold today, how much will that be worth when you have grandkids? That could afford any lifestyle you want. I know you've got questions, and Noble Gold is a trustworthy resource for answers. Contact a Noble Gold representative to learn more about making your saving a priority. If you didn't start early, that's okay. There's no time like today to get started and make sound financial decisions. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and call one of their experts, NobleGoldInvestments.com. So I'm going to take a temporary pause. Let's see what the Republicans have to say, and then we'll resume. Senator Tim Scott.
President Biden promised you a specific kind of leadership. He promised to unite a nation, to lower the temperature, to govern for all Americans, no matter how we voted. This was the pitch. You just heard it again. But our nation is starving for more than empty platitudes. We need policies and progress that brings us closer together. But 3 months in, the actions of the president and his party are pulling us further and further apart. I won't waste your time with finger pointing or partisan bickering. You can get that on TV anytime you want. I want to have an honest conversation about common sense and common ground, about this feeling that our nation is sliding off its shared foundation and how we move forward together. Growing up, I never dreamed I would be standing here tonight. When I was a kid, my parents divorced. My mother, my brother, and I moved in with my grandparents, three of us, sharing one bedroom. I was disillusioned and angry, and I nearly failed out of school. but I was blessed. First, with a praying mama. And let me say this to the single mothers out there who are working their tails off, working hard, trying to make the ends meet, wondering if it's worth it. You can bet it is. God bless your amazing effort on part of your kids. I was also blessed by a Chick-fil-A operator, John Moniz. And finally, with a string of opportunities that are only possible here in America. This past year, I've watched COVID attack every rung of the ladder that helped me up. So many families have lost parents and grandparents too early. So many small businesses have gone under. Becoming a Christian transformed my life, but for months, too many churches were shut down. Most of all, I'm saddened that millions of kids have lost a year of learning when they could not afford to lose a single day. Locking vulnerable kids out of the classroom is locking adults out of their future. Our public schools should have reopened months ago. Other countries did. Private and religious schools did. Science has shown for months that schools are safe. But too often, powerful grown-ups set science aside, and kids like me were left behind. The clearest case I've seen for school choice in our lifetimes, because we know that education is the closest thing to magic in America. Last year, under Republican leadership, we passed 5 bipartisan COVID packages. Congress supported our schools, our hospitals, saved our economy, and funded Operation Warp Speed, delivering vaccines in record time. All 5 bills got 90 votes in the Senate. Common sense found common ground. In February, Republicans told President Biden, we wanted to keep working together to finish this fight. But Democrats wanted to go it alone. They spent almost $2 trillion on a partisan bill that the White House bragged was the most liberal bill in American history. Only 1% went to vaccinations, no requirement to reopen schools promptly. COVID brought Congress together 5 times. This administration pushed us apart. Another issue that should unite us is infrastructure. Republicans support everything you think of when you think of infrastructure. Roads, bridges, ports, airports, waterways, high-speed broadband. We're in for all of that. But again, Democrats want a partisan wish list. They won't even build bridges to build bridges. Less than 6% of the president's plan goes to roads and bridges. It's a liberal wish list of big government waste, plus the biggest job-killing tax hikes in a generation. Experts say when all is said and done, it would lower wages of the average American worker and shrink our economy. Tonight, we also heard about a so-called family plan, even more taxing, even more spending, to put Washington even more in the middle of your life, from the cradle to college. The beauty of the American dream is that families get to define it for themselves. We should be expanding opportunities and options for all families, not throwing money at certain issues because Democrats think they know best. Infrastructure spending that shrinks our economy is not common sense. Weakening our southern borders and creating a crisis is not compassionate. The president is also abandoning principles he's held for decades. Now he says your tax dollars should fund abortions. He's laying groundwork to pack the Supreme Court. This is not common ground. Nowhere do we need common ground more desperately than in our discussions of race. I have experienced the pain of discrimination. I know what it feels like to be pulled over for no reason, to be followed around a store while I'm shopping. I remember every morning at the kitchen table, my grandfather would open the newspaper and read it, I thought. But later I realized he had never learned to read it. He just wanted to set the right example. I've also experienced a different kind of intolerance. I get called Uncle Tom and the N-word by progressives, by liberals. Just last week, a national newspaper suggested my family's poverty was actually privilege. Because a relative owned land generations before my time. Believe me, I know firsthand, our healing is not finished. In 2015, after the shooting of Walter Scott, I wrote a bill to fund body cameras. Last year, after the deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, I built an even bigger police reform proposal. But my Democratic colleagues blocked it. I extended an olive branch. I offered amendments, but Democrats used a filibuster to block the debate from even happening. My friends across the aisle seemed to want the issue more than they wanted a solution. But I'm still working. I'm hopeful that this will be different. When America comes together, we've made tremendous progress, but powerful forces want to pull us apart. 100 years ago, kids in classrooms were taught the color of their skin was their most important characteristic. And if they looked a certain way, they were inferior. Today, kids are being taught that the color of their skin defines them again. And if they look a certain way, they're an oppressor. From colleges to corporations to our culture, people are making money and gaining power by pretending we haven't made any progress at all, by doubling down on the divisions we've worked so hard to heal. You know this stuff is wrong. Hear me clearly. America is not a racist country. It's backwards to fight discrimination with different types of discrimination, and it's wrong to try to use our painful past to dishonestly shut down debates in the present. I'm an African American who has voted in the South my entire life. I take voting rights personally. Republicans support making it easier to vote and harder to cheat, and so do the voters. Big majorities of Americans support early voting, and big majorities support voter ID, including African Americans and Hispanics. Common sense makes common ground. But today, this conversation has collapsed. The state of Georgia passed a law that expands early voting, preserves no-excuse mail-in voting, and despite what the president claimed, did not reduce election day hours. If you actually read this law, it's mainstream. It will be easier to vote early in Georgia than in Democrat-run New York. But the left doesn't want you to know that. They want people virtue signaling by yelling about a law they haven't even read. Fact checkers have called out the White House for misstatements. The president absurdly claims that this is worse than Jim Crow. What is going on here? I'll tell you, a Washington power grab. This misplaced outrage is supposed to justify Democrats' new sweeping bill that would take over elections for all 50 states. It would send public funds to political campaigns you disagree with and make the bipartisan Federal Elections Commission partisan. This is not about civil rights or our racial past. It's about rigging elections in the future. And no, the same filibuster that President Obama and President Biden praised when they were senators, the same filibuster that the Democrats used to kill my police reform bill last year, has not suddenly become a racist relic just because the shoe is now on the other foot. Race is not a political weapon to settle every issue the way one side wants. It's far too important. This should be a joyful springtime for our nation. This administration inherited a tide that had already turned. The coronavirus is on the run. Thanks to Operation Warp Speed and the Trump administration, our country is flooded with safe and effective vaccines. Thanks to our bipartisan work last year, job openings are rebounding. So why do we feel so divided? Anxious. A nation with so much cause for hope should not feel so heavy laden. A president who promised to bring us together should not be pushing agendas that tear us apart. The American family deserves better, and we know what better looks like. Just before COVID, we had the most inclusive economy in my lifetime, the lowest unemployment rate ever recorded for African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians, and a 70-year low nearly for women. Wages were growing faster at the bottom than at the top. The bottom 25% saw their wages go up faster than the top 25%. That happened because Republicans focused on expanding opportunity for all Americans. In addition to that, we passed opportunity zones, criminal justice reform, and permanent funding for historically black colleges and universities for the first time ever. We fought the drug epidemic, rebuilt our military, and cut taxes for working families and single moms like the one that raised me. Our best future will not come from Washington schemes or socialist dreams. It will come from you, the American people, black, Hispanic, white, and Asian, Republican and Democrat, brave police officers in black neighborhoods. We are not adversaries. We are family. We are all in this together, and we get to live in the greatest country on earth. The country where my grandfather in his 94 years saw his family go from cotton to Congress in one lifetime. So I am more than hopeful. I am confident that our finest hour is yet to come. Original sin is never the end of the story. Not in our souls and not for our nation. The real story is always redemption. I am standing here because my mom has prayed me through some really tough times. I believe our nation has succeeded the same way because generations of Americans in their own ways have asked for grace and God has supplied it. So I will close with a word from a worship song that really helped me through this past year of COVID. The music is new, but the words draw from Scripture. May the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May his presence go before you and behind you and beside you. In your weeping and your rejoicing, he is for you. May his favor be upon our nation for 1,000 generations and your family and your children and their children. Good night and God bless the United States of America.
So have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. And why would it be? Incognito mode, like the Chrome browser itself, is a Google product. And Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against the company in California, where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. Google's defense, incognito does not mean invisible. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? ExpressVPN. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked. And data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. One of these data points is in your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location, but with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. Every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you get a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN customers that makes it harder for third parties to identify you or harvest your data. Best of all, ExpressVPN is super easy to use no matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, or smart TV. All you have to do is tap one button for instant protection. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. That's ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie.
So that's what the Republicans have to say. We'll talk about that. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. I'd actually love to hear your thoughts on that response. We actually have an email from Grace I want to read in a second. So Joe Biden basically gave a war update as he marches through the Tigris and the Euphrates equivalent of the nation. And I guess Republicans are suing for peace is basically what it sounds like. And so Senator Tim Scott's a nice man. I've met him a couple times. I just think he's vastly underestimating what we're dealing with right now. So let's go through the speech of what Joe Biden did, and then I'm going to be very critical on Republicans because they have no idea what they're doing right now. Democrats have us exactly where they want us, running, afraid, and complaining that they're dividing the country. I'm telling you right now, complaining is not going to get us anywhere. We are in a brass-knuckle brawl politically for the future of our nation. They are willing to use every apparatus of political power to remake America in their image, and we're trying to find common ground and common sense. All right, Joe Biden completely ungrateful when it came to the vaccine. No mention whatsoever. No thanks at all to his predecessor. I want you to think for a second. How could you have two apparatchiks wearing masks behind you? Everyone else wearing masks. The whole country got locked down as a response to the virus. And you don't mention once where the virus came from. You don't mention the place of origination. Instead, he talks glowingly about he has spent dinner dates with Xi Jinping. He talks about how he's toured the world with Xi Jinping as if he's been on like an Expedia commercial with him. I've traveled 17,000 miles with him. This was the Chinese coronavirus, the China virus. Joe Biden didn't mention once that this likely came from the Wuhan Institute for Virology that we funded ourselves. Anyone else notice that? Anyone else notice that he did not mention the very serious question? All he would have to say to satisfy me, and we're going to find where this virus came from, and we're going to make them pay. This is an epidemiological Pearl Harbor. You want to know an attack on our country, Joe Biden? It wasn't the guy from MASH and the zip tie guy and the Chewbacca shaman man, the JV squad, of which we've done plenty of denunciations of. No, no, no. Instead, you want to know an attack on our nation? How about China launching an epidemiological, maybe launching, maybe releasing, maybe it was a mistake, maybe it came from a bat wet market. We all know where it really came from, but I'm saying allegedly. And yet Joe Biden does not say once, I owe it to you Americans whose son is not in school or daughter's not in school, that we're going to get to the bottom of this. And Senator Tim Scott, why did you not mention that? Senator Tim Scott, why didn't you say, Joe Biden, how dare you not bring up the fact that this virus came from China? That dislocated all of our lives, that displaced our well-being, that killed our family members, that killed our friends. And we're talking about common ground and common sense. You have a guy who's bragging that he's in the sisterhood of the traveling pants with Xi Jinping, going around on an intercontinental tour with him. You know, I've spent a lot of time with him, and you know, he's really earnest. He used the word earnest. We're going to get to that in a second. No mention of where the virus came from. I'm going to talk about two things that I think, one thing that I think Biden did well, and one thing I think Republicans can learn on. And some of this is, some of this is a little bit choppy because I'm doing this on the fly. So I apologize as I'm giving this. But it's really important because it's going to tell you where we're headed as a nation and where we're headed politically. Biden talking about self-sufficiency was the strongest part of his speech. Now, if Republicans were smart, which they aren't, Republicans would introduce their own self-sufficiency bill and they'd say, hey, Joe Biden, we'd be happy to invest a bunch of money in making vitamin C in our country, making penicillin and making textiles, but we're going to bring no new people into America until we reach full employment. And every single college graduate that has debt in America has a high paying job that can pay off their debt. Instead, we're now going to pander to this open borders, fictitious dream of corporate America so that the Democrats can bring in more obedient voters. That's basically where we are. But Biden is being puppeteered by people that aren't dumb. So I wrote during the speech this, that Biden is using the most popular part of Trump's economic message against Republicans. Now, by the way, Joe Biden is a corporate hack. He doesn't believe any of this stuff. But instead, millions of people that tuned in tonight think that Joe Biden is now going to be the ambassador of America First economics. That Joe Biden is the one that said, and a very powerful part of his speech was Joe Biden said that he wants, I don't know, what was it, wind panels or something ridiculous made in solar panels, wind turbines. Yeah, so we can kill our bird population. We should make them in Pittsburgh and not in Wuhan or Beijing. Powerful line. Very powerful. America first and America first economics is a very popular position. Donald Trump obviously was the one that pioneered this. Joe Biden is picking one part that he thinks he can use as temporary disguise and camouflage to pander to Midwestern voters without actually delivering anything to them. So Joe Biden says that the environment is all about jobs. Joe Biden, did you plan on apologizing to the 11,000 workers you displaced when you got rid of the Keystone XL pipeline? 11,000 families that are no longer able to enjoy an upper middle class lifestyle because of you? Joe Biden, the job terminator, not one mention of that at all whatsoever. But he does think that raising the minimum wage to $15, which would be a tax on Black and Hispanic workers and small businesses across the country, he believes that this is something that is worth fighting for. Platitude, not good policy. Joe Biden says it's time to end cancer as we know it. Very admirable, but a completely false promise, and he knows it. It's a cheap applause line. Joe Biden, you're not going to end cancer anytime soon. It's not going to happen. And it's lying to your voters. It's a cheap applause line. Now, what was really happening here was Joe Biden was ambitiously playing offense. He views himself as a Woodrow Wilson type figure. He wants to be known as the most liberal president in the last 100 years. Not bring people together or unify. And by the way, Republicans' response to this should not be complaining. Do you know what Tim Scott's position should have been? You know, Joe Biden, you're a bigot. And you should have to answer for the fact that Black kids couldn't go to school the last 6 months because of your policies. The Democrat Party is the party of division, racism, and bigotry. And we as Republicans are now going to say that we're going to put American workers first. So we are going to submit our own self-sufficiency bill. Instead, we're playing defense and talking about Breonna Taylor. What are we doing? Accepting the premise that somehow we need a national policing bill? Is that the Republican Party? That we need a stormtrooper force after Emperor Palpatine talks about he just executed Order 66, if you know what I'm talking about, email me, freedom@charliekirk.com for all you Star Wars fans out there. So it was a war footing, and Joe Biden was overseeing a fundamental shift of the American nation, whether you realize that or not. What seemed and felt like at times of a legislative pitch, he was really trying to change the paradigm in the Overton window, saying, we are now in charge. Now, Bill Clinton famously said in one of his State of the Union addresses that the era of big government is over. Some people are tweeting, they say, well, the era of big government is back. And at Turning Point USA, we literally say big government sucks. I don't really think that's what Joe Biden was saying, though. What I think he was saying is something much closer to what Julius Caesar would have said. The Roman Republic is dead. That's what it felt like. It felt as if Joe Biden, it seemed through his language, his diction, the dystopian look of the two apparatchiks behind him, were in charge. The will of the voters, we don't care. The promises I made are irrelevant. We will make the proper changes necessary to our legislative system and our judicial system, and we will rule with an iron fist. The era of us being in control is here. When will Republicans realize we're not in a policy debate? This is not a Socratic seminar. This is not some professor getting up and saying, give us your ideas, everybody. We're going to come together, and then afterwards we're going to get coffee. They're playing for keeps. So Joe Biden talks about how he traveled the world with Xi Jinping. He called him, quote, an earnest leader. I guess Mussolini was an earnest leader. Was Joseph Stalin an earnest leader? How about Mao Zedong? So Xi Jinping is the heir of Mao Zedong's Red Guard. This is a man that has Uyghurs in concentration camps who surveils his own citizens. They have a one-child policy, and they are maybe going to inflict a massive act of war against Taiwan. And Joe Biden calls them a competitor, as if this is the Chicago Cubs versus the Chicago White Sox. No, no, no. China's not a competitor. They're an enemy of Western civilization. But Biden very well might be compromised by China, calls him an earnest leader. This was a philosophical shift that was disguised as a legislative pitch. These massive government proposals, they're so big it makes your head spin. These are wire transfers to the wealthiest people and companies in the world. Now, Joe Biden went out of his way saying that the wealthiest people need to pay more in taxes. Obviously, by doing so, we're going to inflate the currency that will make wealthier people even richer because they can buy hard assets and assets of which you can adjust the rates of which you collect income. And part of what I think is kind of ironic, and I don't feel sorry for them, is that the 1% that voted for Joe Biden might actually have their taxes raised on them. The 1% that financed Joe Biden's campaign very well might have to pay more taxes. Not going to feel sorry for them. So let me give some unsolicited advice to Republicans. Here's a couple things. Number one, don't fight the tax hike on rich people. It is a losing issue. Let it happen and let Democrats fight their own donors. Let Democrats have to get the calls from angry donors. Instead, Republicans, this is the second thing, Republicans should not fight the fact that we can't pay for this. We can't pay for any of this. So it's irrelevant. We're already deficit spending $7 trillion a year. And Jake and I were talking yesterday, I think that's Jake back there, that the debt right now is a national security issue. It's an intentional dollar diminishing scheme. And for Republicans just to, and Senator Tim Scott, again, nice guy, comes out and is like, well, you know, Congress, we passed five bills. You shouldn't have passed any bills. It's not the role of government to get involved in giving people stimulus payments, bragging about how we've now indebted future generations. I don't care if 94 senators voted for it. No senator should have voted for it. We were against the stimulus then, and we're against the stimulus now. There was no stimulus. You know why? The lockdowns never should have happened. So here's some unsolicited advice to Republicans. Number one, don't fight the tax hike. I'm not supportive of it, obviously. Don't fight it. Losing political issue. Working people think rich people got too rich this last year, and they're not wrong. Now, is a massive tax hike the answer? Probably not. Is confiscatory fiscal policy ever the answer? No. Is it politically a loser? Don't fight it. Republicans probably will. Republicans are probably going to do a big press conference tomorrow. And Mitch McConnell is going to say, you know, the real problem is the fact that he wants to raise taxes on rich people. Ridiculous. Instead, Republicans should call the bluff and submit their own self-sufficiency agenda. Here's what they should say. By an act of Congress, we will subsidize and penalize if vitamin C, penicillin, Advil, Tylenol, PPE, pharmaceutical development, steel, automobiles are not made in America. Self-sufficiency is a winning issue. It's a 90-10 issue. Let Joe Biden get in a fight with his donors of whether or not he wants to raise taxes. Did you hear one thing from Senator Tim Scott about fighting or challenging the corporate oligarchy? It is probably the number one concern amongst Republican voters. That we have a second government in our country that arguably has more power than the federal government. Amazon, Twitter, Facebook, Google are creepily micromanaging the decisions of our country, our countrymen, and our nation. They are destroying small businesses. And yet I have to hear about common ground? No, I want to win, not sue for peace. Joe Biden says there's no wall high enough to keep the virus out. He then started to indulge in this kind of global dream over national greatness, an open border agenda. And Joe Biden said America's an idea. No, Joe Biden, America's our home. America's our nation. When you see America's just an idea, and I've been incomplete enough in my past to say that when I really meant that America is an exceptional place where we are going to have families, that we are going to pass down these values generation to generation, that this is not a colony, Joe Biden, where we temporarily make as much money and we could destroy it and leave. This is not a rental property. This is our home. You see, Joe Biden views America like an Airbnb. You can come have a nice weekend, trash it, and get out of Dodge. Who cares who we bring in? The party's open. The credit card's on somebody else. You see, we view America as a home that we grew up in, that our parents raised us in, that our grandparents fought over. So you're not going to wreck that home just for a weekend. It's not a temporary place to pursue pleasure. No, you're going to take ownership of that property. You're going to be really concerned when, if you have a small party at your home, someone starts inviting all these people. He's like, I don't know these people. And they start trashing it. Now, obviously, I'm using a metaphor for a broader truth, but it is true. Joe Biden views this country like a timeshare. Get in, get out, not my place, irrelevant. So there are three different types of outcomes of where this can go. Do you view America as a colony, a commune, or our country? A colony is we're going to make as much money as possible and get out of Dodge. A commune is kind of Bernie Sanders' Bolshevik dream. That's not going to happen. Here's a news flash to the communists. The corporatists are playing you, and they're going to win. The communists are not. Number three, or is this a country? The Republican Party should say, you know what? We agree with Joe Biden that Jeff Bezos has too much money. And he got it by destroying small business. That's why the Republican Party is going to introduce the Jeff Bezos Act to say that anyone that has more than $100 billion in America should then have to either give the money to charity or should have to be part of some sort of patriotic pledge that they're going to invest in American workers. Whatever. Get creative. Maybe it's all posturing. It's that I have to go talk about, we have to talk about police reform bills as if that's an existential threat to our country. Again, Tim Scott, nice guy. I've met him before. Joe Biden never mentions gang violence, the fatherlessness crisis. He mentioned opioids once. Maybe Joe Biden should mention that 77% of Americans, black Americans, do not have a stable father in the home. And that's the Washington Examiner who said that. Joe Biden did not mention at all the cost of lockdowns in our nation. Tim Scott did, to his credit. It was the best part of his speech when he mentioned that schools should have been open quite some time. And he said that parents or adults did not make the right decision, the best part of his speech. But this is where it all kind of came down and to a point of completion. Joe Biden is not president of the United States. He's president of the Democrat Party. And we warned about this, that Joe Biden views success as to whether or not Democrats are going to be able to win elections. So Joe Biden then contradicted every single American First pledge he made earlier in the speech with his true ambitions. And listen carefully, everybody. Open up our country and legalize people that have illegally harbored themselves. Use immigration as a political strategy. Thank you, Tucker Carlson, for mentioning that. And then the real completion. The thing that was the bow on the actual goal of the night, H.R. 1. The thing that got Nancy Pelosi so excited, she sprung out of her chair. A permanent power grab. We are going to register felons, people in prison, the entire DMV registry. We're going to get rid of an impartial FEC. All challenges must go through the D.C. court. We will change the way elections operate for good under the guise of democracy. Well, Joe Biden, we're not a democracy. We're a republic. Wouldn't it be nice if Senator Tim Scott would have explained what a republic is? Wouldn't it be nice if Senator Tim Scott said, you know, a democracy is where the loudest voice and the most people in the streets get what they want. A republic is where there are rules for the road enshrined from natural rights given to us by God, where a slow, decentralized, state-based local process is given preference. And you must have a good idea of a long period of time to revolutionize this country. Wouldn't that be refreshing to hear? So we talk about, I promise you, the Southern bill, the bill in the South is not racist. Of course it's not racist. We know it's not racist. Why even accept the premise? Why defend something we know that's not true? Instead, we should say, you know what? If one more corporation does this, the Republican Party will be the punishment of the corporations. You'll pay a price if you declare economic warfare on Georgia. Joe Biden, by pushing forward H.R. 1, is basically saying, I want a death blow to the Republic. It reminds me of the Star Wars scene of Emperor Palpatine. Now, I'm a Star Wars guy. I am. I actually like episode 1, 2, and 3. I'm weird like that. Don't like the new ones. They're all woke and nonsensical. 4, 5, and 6 are works of art. They're beautiful. You might say, what is beauty? That which is perfected in being. But Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, Star Wars, all the same story told differently. And it's, again, have you heard me give this speech before, Connor? I'm sure you have. Yeah, I've given this speech so many times. Same guy. A guy without a father who's raised by his uncle in a less than opportune place under the stairs in the Shire on Tatooine in a place of innocence, I should say, goes on a journey to go save the innocent around a team that compliments him, faces a challenge that's external, realizes the true challenge is actually inside themselves, the Force, the Ring, and of course, Voldemort inside of him. Same story told different ways. So this one is episode 2. No, this is episode 3, I think, which is The Revenge of the Sith. Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith. Am I right? So anyway, Emperor Palpatine, also known as Joe Biden, is literally giving an address to the Senate during this. So you guys, for those that don't like Star Wars, just bear with me. You got to trust me here. It's worth it. So Emperor Palpatine is giving this speech in front of the Senate, literally. And Princess Leia, is that, no, not Leia. No, I'm sorry. No. Leia is not even born yet. What's her name? Princess Padme, right? Padme. She's watching the speech. And while Palpatine is giving the speech, he has an entire enforcement arm, also known as Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker, who's killing the Jedi. Basically, he's saying how wonderful and peaceful things are while his enforcement arm is doing his dirty work while he's giving the Senate. Sound familiar? Enjoy.
And an remaining Jedi will be hunted down and defeated.
The attempt on my life has left me scarred and deformed. But I swear, my resolve has never been stronger. In order to ensure the security and continuing stability, the Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire for a safe and secure society.
This is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause.
So this is how liberty dies, to thunderous applause. And it's hard to hear Palpatine, who, by the way, looks just like Joe Biden. Let's just be very clear. Very similar. Sickly, old, manipulated, Machiavellian. And hard to understand. Slurring of the words, too. They have that in common. And Palpatine said, and now I end the Republic and we will now be the Galactic Empire. Padme, so that's how liberty dies, to thunderous applause. Email us your thoughts, everybody. freedom@charliekirk.com. Barry says, well, it's more of Count Dooku with his strings being pulled and manipulated. Pelosi's Palpatine. By the way, man, go watch the movies again before you make the fanboys cry. Hey, in all fairness, I've been too busy working my way through Aristotle's Ethics. Okay, but thank you for listening, Barry. God bless you. So in closing here, this was Joe Biden on war footing. Felt like a general giving an update on the war effort. And I wanted Tim Scott to punch back, not sue for peace. They are not going to stop everybody until there is a counteroffensive against them. Political, peaceful counteroffensive, where they know there's a price to these ideas. They're not going to stop. Ever. This is not about socialism and capitalism. This is about us in charge, you're not. This is about turning us into California, where there's a one-party state, and you sit down and obey, and the Republicans are annoying in their ear. What they did to Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, it's coming to a state near you all across the country. They think Republicans are an annoyance. Did Joe Biden do one gesture of unity? Of course not. Instead, Tim Scott should get angry. Say, that's what, you know what, we're going to use whatever political power we have. What Tim Scott should say, I'm calling on the Attorney General of South Carolina, my friend, to go investigate the tech companies, because it seems as you like them, Joe Biden. Whatever power we have at our disposal, we need to start using, because they're unafraid to use theirs. And this is where the base is, everybody. The base of the Republican Party is growing impatient of the same corporate talking point platitudes. The same bumper stickers over and over again. We want action. At the very least, we want a speech that is going to articulate the real problems our country is facing. And it's not national police bills. You think that's how Republicans are going to win? Do you know that the majority of the black community actually has respect for the police? And then I have to hear about original sin. I'm sorry, what? What are you talking about, original sin? You're talking about how Thomas Jefferson, in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, called slavery an unspeakable sin and blamed King George for it? Do you mean the original sin of Vermont abolishing slavery in 1777? Senator Tim Scott, I'd love to get your opinion on the Northwest Territories. Northwest Territories, the first new sovereign piece of land put in front of Congress. And George Washington, as president, signed into law, approved by Congress, that it will be a free area, territory, not slave. How is that an original sin? Is the original sin the fact the founders knew slavery was wrong and they're working to untangle it and get rid of it? And it wasn't until the opportunistic political gallivanting of Southern Democrat John C. Calhoun that slavery even made a slight revival in our country? What sort of original sin are you talking about? Of John Quincy Adams, who went back as a public servant to go abolish slavery in the U.S. Congress? Or John Adams, who said that the Constitution is made holy for a religious and moral people, it's inadequate for any other? Or Thomas Jefferson, who signed a new importation ban of slaves into the United States 20 years after the ratification of the U.S. Constitution? Every other country had the original sin of slavery. We're the only ones who founders actually dealt with getting rid of it and gave us an ideal in this, the greatest political document ever written, to get rid of it. I don't understand this constant pandering. It's a misrepresentation of history. It's not going to win the future. Instead, bold, decisive, clear leadership is what's going to get it done. Maybe that's why Donald Trump won an election all the moderates couldn't win. Nice guy. But I'm running out of patience with the Neville Chamberlain Republicans. Suing for peace. Wishing for bringing common ground together. He did have some nice parts. Again, I'm glad that he's an articulate for an opportunity-based Republican Party. But my goodness, if you think they're going to stop on the shores of France, they'll be bombing London soon. We do not have a white supremacy problem in our country. We have a liberal supremacy problem in our country. Aaron says, Charlie, thanks so much for your words tonight. You were correct in everything you said about Star Wars. I'm an avid Star Wars fan. And that scene from Revenge of the Sith has been playing my mind for months, especially tonight. I'm so glad I'm not the only one who saw the parallels. Thank you so much for being bold and not backing down on important issues. It's so refreshing to hear, Aaron. Thank you, Aaron. God bless you. Here's a question from another one of our listeners, freedom@charliekirk.com. You can email us. Hi, Charlie. I think you should run for senator in Arizona since Martha McSally lost both races. Maybe if you were a senator and you were there to make these speeches for us on these issues would be addressed and you not allow the Democrats to get away with murder, you would shape them into place. Too young for that. And by the way, I'm far too happy to ever run for federal office. I love my life. I get to have this radio show, having a wonderful time at Turning Point USA, educating the next generation. We're doing a lot of good for the country. And I'll let other people go be miserable and have to go sit through that nonsense. I say this sarcastically and sardonically, at least the reaction. I'm not running for anything. Let's just be very clear. We're going to grow this podcast to be the number one podcast on the planet. We're going to grow Turning Point USA to be a force for good, to educate our children, to love our country. I'll leave politics for other people. Far too passionate about this stuff to go try to find common ground in U.S. Congress. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.